It's time to take command with former NFL tight end Logan Paulson and former Commanders beat reporter Craig Hoffman.
Well, that was fun, wasn't it? Well, maybe. We're going to discuss that very thing. The score, that was fun, but a big but with the Jaden Daniels injury. Danny Ruye with me tonight here on the Take Command post-game show. I am Craig Hoffman. I decided I wasn't going to go to the game, and Danny, I'll say that's a decision that I think worked out in my favor. Logan's getting the night off from the post-game show. We'll obviously be back with Logan's thoughts and a tape review on Tuesday. I also was texting with him during the game, so I'll try to intersperse his thoughts. You have a beard. I've got his thoughts. We can basically make up for Logan Paulson.
Yeah, I'm going to cosplay Logan Paulson. I had some bone broth today and one mung bean, so that's like my special treat, so I should be
He's a big man. He needs at least three.
For 7 days. Yeah, I mean, you know, he had a carb in 2017. He didn't like it, so we stayed away from it. But yeah, I think you said it, dude. This is all very strange. First of all, thrashing a team at home, the team being 3-0 at home. Backup quarterback Marcus Mariota coming in and running the offense like it's Oregon a decade ago. I don't know. And obviously Jaden Daniels' injury kind of hangs over all of it. This is such a strange thing. I'm happy, but there's also something missing, you know?
Yeah, for sure. We're one step short of pure elation because of the Daniels news. Now, we are doing this live at 7. It is currently 7:02 p.m. on Sunday, October 20th. So I mentioned that for those of you watching on YouTube, you know this. For those of you listening on the podcast feed later or watching this on demand later, that is when we are live / recording. So if anything else comes out on Jaden, that's why we're not talking about it. I will take a peek at the comments through in case Quinn starts talking and get any updates. But the early reporting seems good. So that's encouraging. That X-rays seem to come back negative. Whether it's a cartilage issue, whether it's like one of the muscles that are in there, all your intercostals. You know a ton about those, Danny. So whatever it is in his rib that made him go down awkwardly and then obviously come out of the game, he threw the ball on the sideline as everyone saw on TV, and then was like, that doesn't feel very good. Goes back in the back. So that's the Daniels thing. We'll come back to it. In some ways, that's kind of the easy, in terms of the analysis piece, that's the easy part of the conversation. If he's hurt, that's bad. If he's not hurt, that's good. Okay, thanks. Got it covered. But how do you try to make sense of this performance, Danny, as Marcus does come in? First drive was kind of funky, but then they get back to run the football, and then they just go absolutely nuts, and the defense has another stellar performance against a Carolina team that is admittedly very bad at football.
Yeah, Carolina's on serious at this point. I don't know a better way to say it than that. They weren't good on defense to begin with. You subtract Derrick Brown off that group, and they're missing some other guys. They're a disaster up front. So at one point, I think Washington had 132 total yards. 130 of those were on the ground. Just tells you, again, this is not Nebraska in the mid-90s, all right? This is an NFL operation, and Washington really never had to throw the ball in the first half to go up 27-0. They were even content, by the way, to run out the clock when Carolina actually did a good job pinning them deep. Washington's using the full allotment of the play clock, running it a couple times, and Carolina wasn't stopping the clock to try to get the ball back. They screwed up enough for Washington. Went, okay, I guess we could just go down and score. We weren't planning on it, but we will. Just kind of shows you where Carolina is. You feel for some of those guys that are pros there, but you know, it's the NFL. Nobody apologizes for it. So yeah, they did something that Washington doesn't normally do. We've been hammering this on our show a ton. I'm sure you guys have talked about it as well, Craig. In that Washington is now above the threshold where when a team shows up looking to go in one of two directions. Right, that's what bad teams do. Bad teams are looking for reasons to roll over, or they're looking for reasons where maybe they're in the game. You don't give them the latter. You let them get mud stomped, and that's what happened. They had some really nice things in that first draft talking about Carolina. Really cool design runs with Sanders and some misdirection going. The whole focus has been on Chuba Hubbard, so you go the other way. I mean, some really nice stuff. And then, of course, you let them screw up. They're going to mess up. They're a bad football team. Dante Fowler, have a day, take a bow. But it was off to the races from there. They dominated a bad opponent. They've done it to Cleveland, and they did it to Arizona when they played a pretty terrible game. And that's pretty unusual around these parts. You see these every so often here, being a Washington fan, right, where they'll beat up on somebody who doesn't have a good day, and then you know a couple weeks later, it'll look like they've never met each other, and the football's terrible. They're now above that threshold where if you come in here, you're not on your P's and Q's, you're going to get your butt kicked.
And that's what happens. It goes to the play style stuff that Dan talks about all the time. Like, so much of what I love about the way they approach this team and the way it's built and the way they play is it's about them all the time. And so it avoids the ups and the downs that a lot of teams ride of like, oh, let's get up for Baltimore. Like, oh, it's just Carolina. Like, we're good. It's like, no, we are focused on how good we can be. And so you go challenge a team like Baltimore and you play it consistently again at that level, except for the opponent goes from Baltimore to Carolina and you send them into next week. Actually, that would be a favor for Carolina. They would love to be sometime 5 years from now, but that's a different story. I think that the other thing too, that we talked about quite a bit this week on Take Command, and really, like, we talk about this, I almost wonder sometimes too much, but then you get a game like this, you're like, no, this is actually just being exactly 100% on the nose, is how important game flow can be in the NFL, and especially with the way Washington plays. We said with the way Washington plays and with the way that Carolina plays, if Washington can get up early, Carolina's toast. Like, this game's going to go sideways fast because Carolina's got a good offensive line and a good running game. And if they can stay with that, hit some play action shots, get you in some man-to-man situations. Like, Dalton came into this game with the highest completion percentage against man-to-man in the entire NFL. And so they, sure enough, that first drive, run it down their throat a little bit. And Dante Fowler gets that pick six. And I literally was just like, oh, I could throw my notepad away. I didn't even bring my notepad up here. Like, there's no point in the notes of this game. Game ended right there because at that very point, Carolina was going to be chasing the game. And especially Canales made a huge error on that second drive, abandoning the run. Washington goes down on their first offensive drive. If it's 10-0, Carolina's now can't run the ball, can't do anything they want, which, by the way, is where Washington's weaknesses are. And sayonara, it's 37, whatever, going into, you know, oh my God, Bryce Young time. And the 40-7 winds up being the final, whatever it was.
You never want to be in Bryce Young time, it seems like, this year. But no,
although apparently they have a plan for it, Danny. None of us know what it is, but they do have a plan for it.
Rest assured, there's a plan. I can't wait to see that unfold. Anyway, for the actual game, for the game itself, I think you're right. I mean, there was a lot of talk this week, and it's, I'm a weirdo, as you know. We've gotten to know each other over the years. I think differently than everybody, and I find myself kind of alone on an island sometimes. The people that were worried about Chuba Hubbard in the run game, I'm basically going, that's doing us a favor, right? You could rip off 5 yards a carry against this defense. This defense is bad enough. If all things were equal, and I'll try to explain myself well here. If all things were equal and this was like a regular defense, a regular football team, I'd go, oh, they're going to give up 5 yards a carry to Chuba Hubbard. I'm concerned about that. I'll take that over huge chunk plays of guys running wild and free in the secondary, which is what Baltimore did to them. When Washington said, all right, let's give it the old college try here. We're going to stop the run. Zay Flowers went 9 for 132 and only stopped because he was tired. You know what I mean? Like, they right. people can gash you in that way. Through their first three games, I think they were allowing 128 quarterback rating for opponents. That's like all-time MVP, you know, greatest Pat Mahomes season type stuff for no matter who the opponent was. So I will sight unseen right now sign up for somebody ripping off 5 yards a carry, because on a team like Carolina, they're going to commit the holding penalty. There's going to be that
exactly.
false start, the
formation. 100%.
There's going to be the bungled snap or some sort of malady that takes place where you just let them screw up. If you want to try to matriculate 10, 12 plays down the field, handing it off, you know, 4.5 in a cloud of dust, you might end up getting the touchdown. You might end up getting two. I will take my chances with, now, again, assuming Daniels is healthy and things are normal, I'll play a track meet game with you all day. You want to score a couple times that way? That's fine. I'll do it better than you over the course of 60 minutes. So I wasn't anywhere near as concerned as others. My concern was offensive proficiency when it came to, you know, Deontay Johnson. Is it Leggett? Or Leggett?
Ian said that there was a new pronunciation. I think it's Leggett.
Leggett
is where it goes. So
I'm not sure. So with apologies, young man, I like him as a second option.
Best accent in the league. You gotta. I don't know if you have a Leggett impression in your box, but you gotta get one going.
I need it. So I like some of their pieces. You know, Dalton's competent when you don't make him move his feet. So that was more my concern, was the occasional chunk play off of those gut punches, but. But I think you're 100% right, though, in terms of game flow. The challenge last week, thinking about Baltimore, was you got someone that could do what you do and has done it for multiple years, right? Let's see what happens if the game flow isn't according to plan for you. And that was valuable experience. I thought that was good. They went toe-to-toe, weren't embarrassed, didn't get run out of the building. You know, kind of experience points there, using a video game term for Jaden Daniels. But when the game flow is in their favor, a lot like Baltimore over the last couple of years, I'll take my chances with them against a team like that.
Right, for sure. And that was the kind of thing that impressed, I think, a lot of people about last week's game for Jaden was, you know, we have Dan Pizzuta, who comes on our show from 33rd Team every week, and he used the word quarterbacky. It was like Jaden's most quarterbacky performance. I was like, I like that. That's a good word.
Yeah.
Because it was like, oh, Jaden actually had to do the drop back. Like, we're in a bad game flow. I got to rescue us thing. And he did a really good job. The problem was defensively, like Baltimore was in the, hey, we're up game flow and we're going to run the ball down your throat. And Washington couldn't get the stop because that's not exactly their specialty. So it does come down to that. But yeah, in a game like today with the early turnover, the pick six, a score getting sideways, it just made it a fairly stress-free day. And you saw like they were able to get some pressures. You know, Duran had a really good game, I thought, some good rushes. Obviously, Luvu, Fowler had, you know, I don't want to turn back the clock. He just randomly does this like five times a year where he has like really stupidly impactful games. And then
you make your season in a month. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other 12, you're like, oh, but yeah, he was great. Hey, Emmanuel Forbes with the pick. I know it was a gift, but like, welcome back. Good to see him on the field and maybe build a little confidence. So I think there's a lot of good stuff. I think offensively is where the discussion, because I don't want to say like, I don't want to pretend like that offensive performance wasn't great. I do want to say like, some of what they were able to do offensively, the prolificness was because Carolina is awful. And I don't know, Danny, are you a big Madden guy? I know Darius is. We actually had a whole thing on our show this week on the radio side with Darius and Anthony, and Anthony's messing up the sim rules. But like, you know, when you're playing Madden and you have the difficulty mode on a little too easy and you just kind of sit back in the pocket and then you run around and then you're like, oh, and you're playing with the mobile quarterback. You're playing Madden 04 and it's a guy, Mike Vick, and you're just like, let me wait the 3 seconds and then scramble for 70 yards. That's kind of how Marcus Mariota played quarterback for some of this game, where you're just like, man, none of this is on time. He had a really nice stretch, like mid-second quarter into the third, where he actually was a lot more on rhythm. And it was like, okay, if they have to play like this, this is repeatable against better teams. But also there's some plays even on those drives where you're like, okay, we're extending this drive because Marcus is doing nonsense. And like, good for Marcus because that's his job in that point. It's not his fault that Carolina can't rush the passer. But I do think that like you see the difference in level of Baltimore versus Cleveland versus Carolina versus some of these other teams, that Carolina has absolutely no teeth. And like, all Washington can do is take advantage of that. And boy, did they. But like, let's not pretend like, oh, if Jaden were to miss 3 weeks, everything's hunky-dory because of how Marcus Mariota played in this game.
I think that's the illusion, right? And that's kind of where, that's why I don't feel euphoric here after a blowout win, which we usually tell people to smell the roses on those because they don't come around all that often. Taking advantage of a bad opponent, you don't apologize. That's who's on your schedule. You handle them the way that Washington just did. But I think that was the telltale to me, right? I mean, a number of times, and Daniels, I think at certain points, no quarterback is perfect, but the beauty of someone like that is even when you miss, like I'm thinking of a couple of plays I could tell, you know, there was, I think after Ertz false started, I mean, the game is academic at this point, but Ertz false starts, backs him up to a 3rd and 7. Mariota then hits Ertz over the middle, little shy of a first down. Austin Eckler is just alone. I mean, to the point where if you swap bodies, me and him, I could have caught it. I would have stumbled, probably pulled 3 things, but I'd have fallen forward for a first down. Eckler probably scores. Mariota never sees him, turns it down, didn't get whatever. Now, that sounds like a ripping him with, you know, everybody, every quarterback, every play probably misses something here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah,
but the beauty of someone like Daniels is where there have been moments like if something's there in that first window and it had to be perfect and he doesn't see it, the play's not dead. In fact, it can be a wonderful play still, and often it has been. A couple different times over the course of the season. And Mariota's got a lot of that, but it's not the magic. It's not the same level of it. So against a good opponent, to your point, there'd have been a couple more sacks today. They're probably like a little bit of turnover. Some of those inaccurate ball placement things would have come back. And that's, you know, another one of those attributes we take for granted sometimes with Daniels is that accuracy and ball placement for a rookie or for anybody has been utterly fantastic. And you can see it there, right? I don't know if it was to Noah Brown, but there was a ball that should have been kind of more to the inside. It was kind of way outside. And again, on that play, Eckler was wide open too, by the way. Maybe they're having a feud. I just started a rumor. But you know what I mean? Like you could tell it's not quite precise with him. Forgivable. Mm-hmm. He's a backup, doesn't get near the reps, nor should he.
100%.
You could see it's not quite as fine-tuned.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what we saw in camp. Like, he's just not as good as Jaden Daniels. And we can talk about the competition that they had. And it's like, yeah, they had a competition. But, like, if I play LeBron in a one-on-one competition, technically we're having a competition, but I don't have a chance of winning. And Jaden had no chance of losing the quarterback competition because he is way better at Marcus Mariota. I do feel like I should put a disclaimer. Marcus Mariota is better at football than I am at professional NBA basketball in said analogy. However, like, they're not the same. With more reps this week, if that's what it takes, like, he'll be better, I would hope. But the Bears defense is also nasty. That's like, they have given up 21 points or less in like 12 of 13 or something like that, dating back to last year. They are really, really, really good. And that game flow is probably not going to get sideways. And if it does, like, Caleb's going to start running around and doing crazy stuff. And who knows what could happen with that. So it definitely is, like, Jaden coming back next week is really important, not just because it's the game of the week and Jim Nantz and Tony Romo are coming to town and, you know, all that kind of stuff, the hoopla of it all. But, like, if Washington wants to win that game, I'm not going to say they need Jaden Daniels because I don't want to, you know, that seems unfair to everyone else. But, like, if they want their best chance to win, they need Jaden Daniels. All indications are he's going to be okay. That is good. So, Danny, if we assume that Jaden is going to be back, and who knows, maybe he could have even played in this game if it wasn't a blowout and they were, you know, inclined to risk such a thing. But with the game getting sideways so fast, like, what's the point? So if he's okay, how do you feel about this team moving forward at 5-2? And then Chicago coming up next week.
Chicago's playing well. They started off clunky, tough on offense. They've kind of found their stride here over the last couple of weeks. They just did this to Carolina 2 weeks ago, did it to Jacksonville this past week. I think it's a combined 71 points over the last two games. Sounds pretty familiar, right? And you said it, defensively, they're pretty good. This Chicago team I like, but that's neither here nor there. I mean, we're talking about a specific week, and we'll break it down from all angles, you know, as we should. But bigger picture, the way I feel now about Washington is, if you're a bad team on their schedule, you're going to catch these hands, right?
Which there are a lot of bad teams on their schedule, by the way.
Exactly. So
I was going to say, too, I saw a stat from Aaron Schatz, you know the name, the guy who basically founded DVOA. Yeah, and he said their DVOA numbers, like, the five worst teams in the NFL and DVOA are all like minus 30% or something DVOA, which is the worst. Like, there's never been this many bad teams that are this bad at this point in the schedule. So, like, if you suck in the NFL this year, you are all time bad.
I think that's well put, right? Because I don't want to say middling. That sounds too insulting, but I don't think there's anybody great right now. There may be by January, someone will emerge. I think there's a few teams I've been really impressed, obviously, with Minnesota, thoroughly impressed with Kansas City, where Pat Mahomes led the league in interceptions, and they're still undefeated. They're about to win, right here. They haven't already since we started recording. But, excuse me. But I don't think there's a great juggernaut or two at this point. Even the teams we sort of expect to be haven't really emerged just yet. So I think the top is still really, really good, but there's a whole bunch in the middle, in the upper middle class, so to speak, that's very solid, even strong. So if you're wanting something or owing something, you're absolutely right. You are god awful at this stage in a league of parity where, you know, double digit point underdogs are winning nearly every week. And if you still can't get right, you're getting blown up by 25, 30 points a week. There's certainly an issue there. Yeah. And so right now in the league, it seems to me, I mean, everybody's theme kind of changes each year. There's always something kind of like a driving force or here's a new axiom to live by. What I feel like right now is if you beat teams that aren't very good on your schedule, you're probably going to win 9 or 10 games. And that's rarefied air around here. That's not something I would sneeze at. I think you win a couple of these toss-up games. I think they're pretty evenly matched for Chicago. I'm curious to see what you think about that. Maybe not the Chicago the first 4 or 5 weeks, but maybe the last couple of weeks. Chicago's doing what Washington's doing, beating up on some bad teams and looking pretty good while doing so. I feel like if you go 500 in those kinds of games, right, Philadelphia, Chicago, maybe another game or two on your schedule like that, you could be in a pretty great place by the end of the season. That's division winning stuff. That's hosting a playoff game. I think it's on the table.
I think it's 100% on the table. I will probably, assuming Daniels is healthy and fully practices and the whole deal, I will probably pick Chicago over Washington. And we'll see what the early spread is. I'm sure the early spread probably actually will change because we'll find out more about Daniels. But like, I would assume Washington's favorite in that game. And if it's more than like 2.5, I'd probably pick Washington. Like, I think that they are distinctive favorites in this one. They have just been so much more solid than Chicago has been. And even Chicago's wins, like, they've looked great the last couple of games they play. They had a bye this week, obviously. But it was Jacksonville and Carolina. Like, we just saw how good Carolina is. They're not. Jacksonville finally looked competent today, but it took facing the Patriots to do it in London after they had already been there a week and New England had to come over. So I think Pittsburgh's probably the best team left on their schedule. And like, that's going to be a really tough game, but like, also, is Pittsburgh any good offensively? Obviously we'll find out with the Russell Wilson experience is tonight when they take on whoever they're facing on Sunday Night Football. Cause that's that game's tonight, right?
I just blanked on it. Pittsburgh is playing the Jets.
Yeah. So that, I mean, that's a good enough defensive test that we'll learn something from that game. And then like, other than that, Philadelphia, Dallas, like those are tough games because they're division games. Mm-hmm. Giants will be a pain in the butt, but they're not any good. And there's not a lot of other good teams on their schedule either. So right. The benefit of sucking last year is you have the last place schedule and a lot of those teams are still bad. So I think all in all, like you're looking at New Orleans, Atlanta is still on the schedule too, by the way. And who knows what Atlanta is week to week and New Orleans is.
Yeah.
You must see that guy's not playing
New Orleans in week one or two. You play this New Orleans team.
You want to see some bad football. Holy
I looked it up,
crap.
By the way. Chicago early look ahead line, 1.5 or 2, depends on your book. Chicago favorite.
Interesting. That's so got to be injury
related. Not updated with or without Daniels. I think that was based on earlier, but just a point of reference.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like, I think this is a really good football team. And I think they're just going to show, and by and large, they've played really consistent football for the last 5-6 weeks. And then their margin of victory, or in the Baltimore case, their one loss, has to do with the opponent. Like, since the Tampa game, they have relatively just played steady, really, really high-level football that's gotten progressively better and better and better, more consistent. They've solved a few problems. And then, depending on the fluctuation of the opponent, they have either curb-stomped them or fought valiantly and lost to the Baltimore Ravens. This is a good football team, and I'm really excited to see what they can do. And, you know, I think that Chicago is a good test, but, like, I think Washington's a better football team, and I would rather be them with the way that they're running the operation in Ashburn than the way they're running things in Chicago, which feels very ham-handed in a lot of ways, even if the defense is playing well.
Yeah, Chicago's division is a little bit deeper with the higher ceilings in there too. Curious, I want to tap into your football brain on something. This is something I've been kind of kicking around, and I feel like I saw it again today. Now, I don't know if this is a product of the defense being more successful and maybe guys winning more, but it feels like against teams that they feel comfortable going up against, it's a more aggressive defensive game plan. We play Cleveland. Let's have Bobby Wagner and Frankie Louvu meet at the quarterback. Feels like they gave a little bit too much respect to Tampa, a little bit too much respect to Baltimore. And my thought is you might get burned doing it that way against a good offense. You play conservative, you're going to get burned anyhow. That's kind of my thought. And maybe see if you can even create some of those turnovers. It feels like they're willing to play feeding frenzy style against some of these offenses that they feel like they can beat around. What's your take?
I think it's risk reward. And there's not really a lot of risk because the team you're playing is not very good, then fire away, as opposed to getting bodies back. And I think, for Chicago, they're interesting too. I haven't obviously done a whole lot of homework on them yet, but I don't think that they're like this incredibly complex, like we got a game plan for it run team. They do have some really good guys on the outside. So like, I'm probably zoning them up and being like, I'll dare you to run the football. And I think Caleb's going to make mistakes.
DeAndre Swift, please.
Yeah, like let him run into the back of his offensive tackles all day. Like I'm playing too high structures. I'm not being super conservative or super aggressive early in the game. Or I shouldn't even say that. I should say I would be selective early, and then see if I can get them in second and third and long. And that's when you light teams up. I mean, that's ultimately what it's come down to this year. Is like how efficient is the other team on first down? If they're in good down and distance, then they got to try to guard everything, and that's not gone well. But if you get in second and long, well, like now Louvu can go to the edge and we can do some fun stuff. And I think that that's when, they converge on the quarterback. I also think like getting Dorrance Armstrong back is a big deal. Obviously they can get away with it today because Carolina's Carolina, but getting Dorrance Armstrong back like makes this team even stronger. He had an awesome last two games. He was their best defensive lineman probably in that stretch. It was fantastic to see Duran get going. I think Big Phil's playing really well. Like that was an interesting, small adjustment they made. I don't know whether this was like planned rotation or something that they just were like, oh, let's do that. But they, on the second, like after Carolina ran it well on the first drive, they came back with Big Phil to start the second drive. And he was a huge part of getting that first run stuff, gets him in second and long, sack, I think it was. And then good night, it's over. So if they're like, oh, well, if we play Big Phil early and teams are going to try to run and that's not going to work because he's 350 pounds and doesn't get moved, then you can get in some of those good down distances and start to be more aggressive with your rushes. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because also Caleb is a really high variance player at the stage of his career. He can throw four touchdowns or he can throw four picks. And I would certainly want to tempt fate to a percent, but I don't think that percent's 100.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's a good catch by you on Mathis. Because to me, I'm just going, oh, they're rotating guys. But maybe there was an adjustment in there to say, okay, all right, you guys want to go that route? Here's my response. I love being able to have that. I mean, ideally, you've got, you know, two guys that are linchpins. You don't have to do a rotation. Well, no John Allen. You've got to get creative. And maximizing guys that you do have certainly is good. I mean, you saw that fourth down stop as well from Fowler to kind of knifing through there.
That was brilliant. That was
really important and awesome. That was a really, really kind of hidden huge play. Just sort of thinking about some of the other things. I thought the cornerbacks tackled really, really well. Iguanagani and Samra still. Again, some of those hidden, keep the down and distance manageable type stuff so that you can feast a little bit. You know, so think about, you know, the number of times where you got a guy out there maybe diving at some legs, but he still manages another yard or two. So instead of a, you know, a third and six or third and seven, it's a third and two, third and three. Right. And getting those stops kind of dead on arrival, I think we're huge for this defense to be able to, again, get to the point you're talking about, some of those bad down and distances for offense where they're a little bit more uncomfortable with what you might bring.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, something that I've touched on briefly that it's worth mentioning here too is like Joey Jr. is a first-year coordinator. And I think sometimes because they're like grown-ass men who are in their 40s and 50s or 60s, we don't think that coaches can get better. But like, he's a first-year coordinator. And so he's still, I think, at times figuring out like, oh, this is the right situation to do this. I'm going to lean on this here. Maybe they get, you know, as they keep going, like they get those matchups and they get those calls a little bit more right, a little bit more consistently. But week over week, a little bit adds up to a lot. And so I do think that's something that Joe clearly, based off his comments alone, like he's learning that there are things that he's like, I got to be better here. I got to make sure that this is coached up and maybe I let that slip a little bit, or, you know, this emphasis, whatever, this personnel grouping, like he's getting better. And that's really exciting because he's someone that I think could obviously be here for a couple of years. Defense all of a sudden turns into a monster. Like, who knows if he gets looks, but I think that that's going to be really interesting to watch how he continues to call games moving forward as different challenges are presented. But it does feel like Dan has a good pulse on the game flow stuff as well. And that Cliff and Joe and Dan all agree, and Larry Izzo, to the extent the special teams is involved, like, this is how we want to manage game X. Okay. That was last week. Now, how do we want to manage this week? And they all are working in conjunction, and like that cohesion compared to you know, did the offensive defensive coordinator like want to murder each other like has happened in previous years, and the head coach wanting to, you know, screaming at this coordinator and that coordinator, or didn't want to hire him or whatever, all the nonsense, think of whatever other stories you've heard over the last 25 years, not happening anymore, Danny. And that's a great thing.
Yeah, again, that's the, you know, obviously the Daniels injury news hangs over all of this. But to your point, big picture, biggest picture you could possibly have, ownership, a general manager, which should never be overlooked or taken for granted around these parts, not a gimmick, not the owner's like drinking buddy, but like an actual football gentleman making decisions that are thoughtful, forward thinking, near term, short term, long term, everything in between, a coaching staff where guys are empowered and sharp and wanted to be here. And, you know, buying from the players where it's not, yeah, I know what you said, but I got to do my own thing because I need to be able to justify this to my next team. It seems like everybody's pulling the rope in the same direction. I mean, think about this, just little small stuff, right? Where it's, you kind of roll your eyes sometimes at whatever slogan that people are using or how cheesy it is, but it's the way sports are. But the way these guys on kick coverage, it seems like every time someone tries to return, they are getting sandblasted.
They just look somebody at it as an opportunity to murder somebody.
That's what it is. And you're going, that's not an accident. That's right. You know, it's easy for one or two times to rev the let's get fired up engine. Doing that time after time, wave after wave, and taking pride in it, that is not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, Quinn was like, I'm going to keep five safeties. I'm going to put them all on kick coverage, and they're going to race to see who can take someone's heads off. And the NFL office is like, we thought we eliminated this. What are we doing, Dan?
We eliminated it in 31 cities, apparently. But just little cultural stuff like that, and you can see everybody's, you know, fired up for those as they are for the you know, the great offensive design that nets you 26 yards, you know, when the defense is looking the other way. Everyone's as excited for Jeremy Reeves coming down, forcing a fumble on a play as they are for anything else. So there is that degree of buy-in that you're really seeing. And it doesn't feel like the lip service of a honeymoon period where we've seen that before, right? We've heard all the quotes before about it's a new day, this feels new, and everyone's buying in, we're all on the same page. Were you? I don't know. The results didn't say that. These sort of fits, and it helps when the ball's rolling, you guys are, and they're winning. But it does feel that way, to your point.
No, it definitely does. There's an authenticity to the staff and this group that is very, very real. And I think it's something that, like, you know, John Allen, for instance, I think it's something why he kind of checked out at times. And I always kind of had that in the back of my mind. I was like, John played for Nick Saban, and like, he knows what good and authentic and like real looks like. And he's just having to go to work every day and put on this facade of like, yeah, I'm in. And he like, he knows it's BS. And so like, I never like, do you ever want your captain to check out? No. Dude, I understand it on a fundamental human level. Yeah. Same thing for a guy like Terry. And so to see them kind of get rewarded, that's why like it sucks so much that John got hurt at the timing that he did, because he had started to turn the corner, was starting to play well. And you're just like, man, this dude went through a lot of stuff. Yeah. And then it goes out. But like, I think to the your point, like the realness, the authenticity, it is exactly that. And the results are what they are. Okay. From the postgame presser, Dan Quinn, quote, no update on Jaden Daniels, more tests tomorrow. Both the Team 980, it'll be during Russell's show at 3:30 on our side. Grant Danny will have it on their show, Dan Quinn Live, 3:30 tomorrow. So you will hear from the head coach then on that. Logan and I will react to everything else that Dan says. And I guess I'll probably just watch the first half, if I'm being honest. There's no point in watching the second half tape, which makes my job a little bit easier tomorrow in terms of watching the tape. But we will watch as much tape as is necessary and be ready for a tape review show on Tuesday here on Take Command. Then, of course, Thursday, we will have our preview show for Chicago. Danny, anything else to note for the Grant and Danny show tomorrow on a Monday?
Yeah, we'll have Jay Gruden, as we normally do, who's always awesome, breaking stuff down. He sees it just differently than everybody else, having called plays, and I wonder what his perspective is on a game like this. And, of course, our usual chat, Austin Eckler, on Tuesday. So it'll be interesting to talk to him about, what do you do at halftime when you're up 27-0?
Right. Were you wide open? Did you yell at Marcus? Is there a feud? Nah. Yeah,
I'm going to ask
you. You better put your journalism hat on, Danny. Otherwise, I'm going to be upset. So you can check that out. 2 to 6:30, of course, on 106.7 The Fan. And then, you know, maybe in their commercial breaks, you flip over to that little Team 980 station for the Hoffman Show just after 4 o'clock. You know, sorry, Chris Russell. But no, always check us out. It's great. We got two stations, a lot of people, a lot of perspectives. So Grant and Danny, 2 to 6:30 on 106.7 The Fan. And I'll see y'all at 4 o'clock on the Team 980. We get started as always with first and 10. So 10 observations from the game. I don't know how I'm going to pull 10 out of this one, Danny, but you know, we're going to make the segment work, because counting to 10 is something that we do well.
Count the scores up. That's like 7.
Yeah, there you go. I just break down every touchdown. Hey, that touchdown, not that interesting. How did Austin Seibert make that one extra point that looked like it hit the ground first? I don't know. Maybe that's what the breakdown is tomorrow. You have to tune in to find out, boys and girls. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. Danny, thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you next time on Take Command.